Welcome to the Poetrygram, a podcast for poetry lovers that offers news, views and prompts to use in your writing. I'm your host, novelist and poet Helen Cox. You can find your free creative writing starter library, which includes a poetry polishing master plan and a publishing master plan, at helencoxbooks.com. And here's the show. Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Poetrygram podcast. I am just about alert enough to put my voice on record in this sudden London heat. Today's show is going to be all about breaking the traditional rules of poetry. And later in the show, I'm going to be looking at two specific examples, the haiku and the sonnet, and talk about how these forms might be modernised, toyed with, or otherwise subverted. First of all, though, I'll start with my usual quick personal update so you know what's been happening with me and my writing. Despite my laptop breaking not once, but twice in the past month, fun times, I have managed to get my second poetry manuscript into shape and ready for its final proof. The pamphlet I'm writing is actually in honour of my late Aunt Shirley, who travelled from Eagle Rock, California to 1980s Middlesbrough to marry her pen friend, my Uncle Ray. She passed away a year ago, and I've since been putting together a small collection of poems inspired by the Native American tradition. Shirley had Apache Native American ancestry and was given a Cherokee name by her grandmother. I'm hoping to release the pamphlet before the end of July. Other than that, I have been working on the edits for my fourth novel, A Body in the Bookshop, and have begun writing the first draft of my fifth novel, Murder on the Moorland. So, as usual, doing all I can to stay out of mischief and, for the most part, succeeding in the task. Now that we've got the introductory catch-up out of the way, it's time for this month's Poetry News Blast. According to reports by the BBC, just over a week ago, poet Joy Harjo was appointed the role of US Poet Laureate and is the first Native American citizen to be appointed in that position. Harjo is a Tulsa-born member of the Muscogee Creek Nation. The appointment is considered to be of deep significance due to the violence toward and betrayal of Native American communities over hundreds of years. Many of their cultural stories and traditions have been lost as their population has fallen and the members of their community have been marginalised. Even now, there is a land dispute raging in Oklahoma between the US government and the Muscogee Creek community, who believe they should have jurisdiction over a murder committed there. The divisions and disputes still run deep, even if to some of us it feels like history. This history still impacts on American society today. Joy Harjo shares deeply of her culture through her poems, helping to bring Native American tradition and perspective into the spotlight. If you haven't read any of Joy Harjo's poetry, I recommend her vivid and unapologetic brand of verse anytime. If you're a poet who listens to and enjoys the Poetrygram podcast, why not enter our competition, the Poetrygram Prize? The aim of the contest is to celebrate and promote a range of contemporary poetic voices, and in a sense create a poetic record of the year we're living in. Consequently, the theme of the contest is 2019. This theme can be interpreted in any way in which the poet chooses. The winner of the Poetry Grand Prize 2019 will receive £150 in prize money and a free hardback copy of the Poetry Grand Annual, a new sister publication to the show in which they will be published. The prize winner will also be interviewed for the podcast and have the opportunity to read some of their work on the show. For more information, please visit helencoxbooks.com. And now it's time to talk about breaking the rules of poetry. Many modern poets tend to lean towards writing free verse. I understand this choice. First of all, it means you're not constrained by tradition. You don't have any strict rules to follow, and it seems to many like the more experimental path. Particularly if you're writing narrative poetry where you might not wish to be bound to set stanzas or rhyme schemes, so that the narrative can flow more organically. The truth is, however, that engaging with well-known forms can add an inherent additional meaning to your work, in part due to these forms being associated with particular emotions, scenarios, or traditions. This might be particularly true if you choose to break some of the rules of the form whilst keeping enough of them to make it clear to the reader which form you are writing in. Let me offer a couple of examples to help explain what I mean. Let's start with one of the simplest forms of poetry, often adopted by those who are new to poetry, the haiku. I often find that poets writing in the West are familiar with the syllabic form of haiku, which asks the writer to form three lines, the first with five syllables, the second with seven syllables, and five more on the third line. One thing to remember on this point, as it originated in Japan, the form has been translated from east to west and has thus become somewhat diluted. The Japanese refer to onji rather than syllables that are often somewhat shorter than Western phonetics. So, according to the Haiku Society of America, if you were going to literally translate the haiku, it would be closer to 12 syllables than 17. The syllabic rule is often the rule people focus on when they write haiku. There are a couple of other elements, however, that are less noted, particularly by writers who post to online forums. The first is that haikus traditionally tended to be written in the present tense, capturing a moment in time. And the second is that haiku are usually expected to refer to some element of nature or the natural world. So actually, a lot of people writing haiku are breaking the rules of the traditional haiku without even realizing it. But what happens if you are aware of the rules and break one or more of them deliberately? In my opinion, this helps to add an additional layer of meaning to your poetry without having to explicitly state anything in the text to your reader. Let's take the haiku as an example. The form, like most forms of poetry and storytelling, started out in the oral tradition. As you may notice, a haiku is quite short, which is more than just a happy coincidence, given that at one time you'd have to remember the poem in order to be able to share it with someone. There was at one time an added pressure to remember and recite poetry. Kevin Kaiser writes on the Literary Kicks website that during the Heian period of Japanese culture, between 700 and 1100 AD, it was a social requirement to be able to recognise and recite poetry from both Japan and China. Kaiser further asserts that the formality and rigidity of Japanese society at this time was translated into Japanese poetry. With this in mind, a bending or breaking of these rules when we write haiku might be considered a rebellion against expectation or type. Perhaps the easiest rule to break is the syllable count for each line. Take the following haiku from my upcoming collection. Like lightning, I've got my jagged edges, but how I'll brighten your sky. This is 17 syllables. It references nature and at least starts in the present tense. But if I stuck with the 5-7-5 syllable count, my first line break would be on the word got, and my second line would break on the word how. That's not really where I want my reader's attention to sit. Consequently, I changed the first line so that it broke the 5-syllable count. The finish line was, like lightning, I've got my jagged edges. I then changed the second line so it read, but how I'll brighten, leaving the last two words, your sky, for the third line. This is a poem about a speaker admitting that they are not perfect, that they have jagged edges, that perhaps manifest quickly out of nowhere, like lightning. But the speaker is trying to reconcile this with the other side of lightning and themselves, the brightening flash, indicating there are some plus points to knowing them and starting a relationship with them, even if sometimes they're quite difficult. Breaking the 5-7-5 rule enabled me to put the line break emphasis on more important words like edges and brighten. It also changed the shape of the poem on the page because the first two lines worked out longer than the last. Ultimately, this meant I was able to change the layout of the poem and make it look a little like a lightning bolt, allowing the physical shape of the poem to mirror the words. Lastly, breaking the rules helped me to mirror a central assertion in this poem, which is that the speaker is doing what people, and particularly women, are generally taught not to do if they want to attract friends and partners. That is, they are admitting to their imperfection and owning it. Because the speaker is going against something that society expects, the breaking of the rigid haiku rules makes more sense and adds another layer of meaning to the poem. A similar approach could be used with pretty much any poetic form you could name. Sonnets, for example, are ripe for manipulation, especially given that most traditional sonnets fit into two main categories, English or Shakespearean sonnets and Italian or Petrarchan sonnets. That gives you two avenues to explore, two sets of rules to break. Here I'm going to focus on the English sonnet, which is a poem of 14 lines with an A-B-A-B rhyme scheme, right up until the last couplet, which is a rhyming couplet. The poem is usually written in iambic pentameter, i.e. with five beats in each line, and is essentially two stanzas or verses, the first of eight lines and the second of six. They are usually pushed together, and on the ninth line, there is traditionally some kind of turning point in the speaker's thought process or attitude. The form is traditionally used to express romantic love, but many a modern day poet, including people such as Terence Hayes, have manipulated this form for other means very successfully. I'm going to suggest a couple of ways you might break the rules of a sonnet for effect. First off, you could decide to use the form to declare love for something other than a person. Your country, your favourite handbag or movie, something unexpected, perhaps even whimsical. Certainly doing this could lend itself to a comedic poem, but don't underestimate the power of this kind of change. It's amazing the serious messages that poets manage to put across through the use of whimsy, dry humour or startling imagery. Another idea is that you could keep all of the other rules, but use half rhymes instead of perfect rhymes for the rhyming couplet to suggest something unnerving, unnatural or rebellious about the love affair being portrayed, without the need to explicitly state this to the reader. It might also suggest uncertainty. Perfect rhyme often has the effect of making something seem sure and certain. If there is an unknown element or a dangerous or risky element, imperfect rhyme in that last couplet would definitely get the reader thinking along those lines. The last suggestion I'll offer up in terms of breaking the rules of writing a sonnet is to actually abandon rhyme altogether and write a poem in blank verse, i.e. write the poem in iambic pentameter but with no rhyme scheme. I think this could make for a really cracking move if you were describing a relationship where you felt lonely, even though you were supposed to be with another person, in a committed relationship. Rhyme is essentially a way of partnering up words and sentences in a piece of writing. So to remove rhyme altogether, I think, particularly in the context of a sonnet, which is known to be about romantic love and togetherness, would have an interestingly alienating effect on the reader. All these things, I think, are definitely worth a thought. I hope the ideas on today's show have given you something to think about in terms of breaking the rules of poetry. Form plays a very important role in terms of how you present your words to the reader, and doing some research into a particular form with a view to breaking the rules of it in some way for effect can really open up new avenues in your writing. If you've only ever written free verse and perhaps feel a bit intimidated about starting to write in the traditional forms, well, at first, it's important to understand that there's no need to feel intimidated. These forms can and have been used by absolutely anyone as a mode of expression. But second, it might be best to start with one form, get really familiar with it, and build from there. As you've heard, writing a haiku is a relatively straightforward task. It won't take you all day either, or at least a first draft won't. Some haikus I've gone back to time and again, making sure the breaks are where I want them and that each word is definitely pulling its weight in terms of meaning. But a first draft is a pretty quick thing to sort out when it comes to that form. I suppose in a way, this underlines another important element of writing poetry, and anything else actually, which is that you shouldn't be afraid to revisit a draft and completely rearrange what you have. I think poets in particular, perhaps because poetry can come from a really personal place, are keen to hang on to those original words. The words themselves are often very beautiful, but sometimes we write beautiful things that aren't serving the greater purpose of the poem or story. And when that happens, it's sometimes best to do that killing your darlings thing, even if it's painful. You could go back to a poem you've previously written and see what it looks like if you change it into a villanelle or a pantoum or a ballad. Sometimes this can help you convey what is truly at the heart of the poem. Above all else, I encourage you to be playful with it. And this idea leads perfectly into this month's prompt. This month, your prompt is simple. All you have to do is break a poetry rule. This might be with the forms mentioned earlier in the show, a haiku or a sonnet, or it might be an altogether different kind of poetry rule. I would hate to be too prescriptive and narrow your horizons. Line breaks and rhyme are probably accessible starting points, but if you're feeling confident, I would love to see you break some poetry rules of your own choosing. And if you do break a poetry rule, please share your work on social media using the hashtag poetrygram07 so we can find your work and share it with ease. Next month's show, we'll be focusing on the work of Sylvia Plath and her place in the poetry canon. So do tune in for that. Thanks for tuning in. I've been Helen Cox, and this is me saying, we no longer know the names of the birds here, how to speak to them by their personal names. Once we knew everything in this lush promise.